Thanks, Marama. Kia ora, welcome to the panel on RNZ National. I'm Karen Hay. I'm here for Wallace Chapman this week, and our panellists today are Sue Kedgley, Board Member of Consumer NZ and the Capital and Coast District Health Board, and also author of the recently published 50 Years a Feminist. Kia ora, Sue.
Kia ora, Karen.
You've been thinking about how fragile women's rights are at the moment. What do you make of Bette Midler's suggestion as a protest against that new anti-abortion law in Texas that all women refuse to have sex with men until they are guaranteed the right to choose by Congress?
Yes, well, I have a sort of considerable sympathy. Others are saying that all American men should be given a vasectomy, because they're basically saying, if we're going to start regulating women's bodies, then surely it's only just and fair that we should be regulating men's bodies as well. And I have a great deal of sympathy.
Mandatory vasectomies, Neil?
Well, look, I want to start by saying that I completely agree and endorse with the comments that Sue Kedgley made before the news break. I think that was a very considered and valid criticism of the effect of fundamentalism on women. In terms of this particular story about Texas, can I say that as soon as I saw that it was going to come up and I saw that I was on with you, Karen, and you, Sue, I was basically hiding under my desk in terror for the entire time. Look, I think Texas has got this horribly wrong. I think they need to reverse this decision. It's a leap backwards, and it's just wrong.
Neil Miller, writer, commentator, analyst at the Taxpayers Union and former National Party staffer. Response to what you said before the news, Neil, regarding COVID and this is from Kushla Robson. Lots of initiatives were job creation, were they not, and economic stimulation. Victoria says, I believe those projects were about employment when people were losing their jobs. And Julie says, could you please ask your guest, Neil, what evidence he has that ACT and National have had ideas COVID that have been adopted by the government. I closely follow the news and I can't think of any examples. Thank you, Julie.
Okay, well, look, first of all, I need to confess that I should not have misunderstimated the intelligence of your listeners. Now, I used the horse racing example because it was the first government funding in response to COVID that was announced, and basically at the behest of Winston Peters, who had very close ties to the racing industry. But it was, as your listeners have pointed out, under the Provincial Growth Fund at that point, because the COVID Recovery and Relief Fund did not exist at that time. So I used that as the example because it was the first, and it was one of the most ludicrous examples of government funding, even though it was under a different fund than I mentioned. To replace it, I will put in stuff that has been funded by the COVID Relief Fund, which is cameras on fishing boats, presumably to stop us getting COVID from fish, and also climate resilience programs.
Not for that reason, obviously.
Yeah, no, that is under the COVID, the CRRF funding.
Not to stop us from catching COVID from fish, obviously.
Okay, well, if you can come with a better reason why COVID Public Health Fund would be funding cameras on fishing boats, I'm open to it. It's just something that they have been talking about
for
years. I
don't know the veracity of that, but I do know why they have cameras on fishing boats, and that's because of the catch that they have to see that they're
absolutely
not throwing.
Absolutely, and that's a perfectly valid argument to have, and they probably should have cameras on them, but it shouldn't be funded through COVID money. My point was that the government is using COVID as a cover for things that don't have any real connection with COVID recovery.
Neil Miller speaking. It's 12 minutes past four and this is the panel. And businesses are keen to show off their vaccinated status of their staff. They're being warned that they'll need to respect employees' privacy. Vaccinated staff could become a selling point for close contact services such as hairdressers or tradespeople who go into people's homes. But employers can't disclose their staff's vaccination status without consent. Well, joining the panel to discuss this is employment lawyer Susan Hornsby-Gallick. Kia ora, Susan.
Kia ora, Karen.
Can an employer advertise for a worker who's been vaccinated, say, this is what we're after?
Absolutely, yes, they can. Employers can advertise for any particular qualities they want, provided they don't discriminate under the Human Rights Act. So, you know, the short answer is yes, you can say we want vaccinated staff for this role. The only exception is if somebody can't get vaccinated either because of their religious beliefs or a disability, discriminating against them could breach the Human Rights Act, so that would have to be taken into account. But those situations will be relatively limited.
So conversely, can a business discriminate when they're hiring on the basis of not being vaccinated, even if they're doing this privately when they're employing someone, if they make it a requirement of the job?
Well, look, again, the short answer is yes. You can, I wouldn't call it discriminate against somebody if they're not vaccinated. It's more saying, look, in this particular role, we believe vaccination is a requirement and we're going to select accordingly. So yes, a lot of employers and a lot of our clients are asking us now to draft that into employment agreements that, you know, if you want to work for us, then this is a requirement of the position.
What about existing staff?
For existing staff, it's more complicated because they didn't sign up to the job knowing that that was going to be a term of employment. There's recently been a case just in the last week where the Employment Relations Authority considered some customs workers who were dismissed because they wouldn't be vaccinated after the organisation decided that they needed to be. The authority upheld that. Now, those workers were also covered by the government order, which made it a bit different. But increasingly, I think employers are moving towards the view that in some roles where there is a high risk, it is a legitimate requirement of the position and consistent with their health and safety obligations.
And can a business promote the fact that they have employees who are vaccinated?
Yes, they can, as long as they don't breach an individual employee's privacy. So if, you know, for example, it's a small workplace, you know, a hairdresser with five employees, and you're going out saying all of our workers are vaccinated, then it's going to be pretty easy to identify who those people are. So the employer would ideally get consent from the individuals concerned before doing that, and then just be careful about breaching people's privacy.
What about lying? You know, I mean, what consent is required? A verbal, or do you have to provide something, you know, tangible?
I think if an employer approaches an employee and says we're going to advertise, this is what we're going to say, are you comfortable with that, and they consent, then that consent is still valid, even if it's not in writing. So provided the consent is clear, then a verbal consent would be sufficient.
The ministry...
What happens if...
Sorry, carry on.
I was just going to say, what happens if, say, your example of the hairdresser, where people are pretty close, you know, what happens if the client says, well, I only want to have a hairdresser who's been vaccinated? You know, so it's not, they're not promoting it, but clients are actually wanting to know, and do they have a right to know?
That's really difficult, because I think that a lot of customers may well take that view, and they're entitled to take that view. So in that situation, the hairdressing salon would need to talk to its staff and say, if a customer asks for this, are you happy being put forward as a vaccinated hairdresser? If they say no, then they wouldn't be given the job.
So employers, they can limit the work that they do based on their vaccination status. In another example, sending a plumber to a home that has children if they're not inoculated, the plumber.
I guess if the client says we only want a plumber who is vaccinated, then, you know, that's the client's prerogative to require that condition, and the business will need to accommodate it.
Thank you very much, Susan. And Sue, do you think we should have to disclose to our employers our vaccination status?
Well, actually, under that, the Privacy Commissioner has made it clear that an employee doesn't have to. So whatever we think under that privacy law, They're not required to. But I think there are a lot of, you know, it's a bit of a minefield. There are a lot of wider issues, because already I'm hearing that some employees are saying, well, they don't feel safe if the other staff they're working with aren't vaccinated. So it's a very grey area and quite a minefield, really.
Yes, Sue's right there, Neil, because the Ministry of Business, Innovation and Employment, not just the Privacy Commission, IMBE, advice on this is that employers are allowed to ask workers, but workers don't have to answer. But that's not very workable in the real world, is it?
No, and I think there's an example that was being used earlier of the small hairdressing salon. And if someone comes in and says, I only want my hair cut by a vaccinated hairdresser, what if there is someone in there who's not vaccinated and a hairdresser is not vaccinated? Do they have to leave the building and give up work for that time because of the customer's wish? So it is, I think, as Sue has rightly pointed out, a grey area. There are difficulties both ways. And you also have the possibility that employees might just simply lie to their employers and say, yeah, I've been vaccinated, but they actually hadn't. So it's and you can't really compel them to show you evidence. It's a good faith agreement, basically.
And I think it says, the commissioner says, if there are legitimate health and safety concerns, then an organisation can intervene. So, you know, is it a legitimate health and safety concern that a client wants to know? I mean, honestly, I think probably all of these issues will end up in the courts.
And Neil, I can ask you as an individual, you're under no obligation to tell me, but are you vaccinated?
I am, but I actually, I'm not sure if it's effective because I didn't post it on social media like all my friends have. So I still hope it works even despite that.
What about you, Sue?
Yes, I'm vaccinated. And when I posted on social media, I got deluged with so many anti-vaccine conspiracy theories that I had to take down my post.
19 minutes past four on the panel, and to a story coming out of China now, and the entertainment industry there has been told to oppose decadent ideas of money worship and hedonism, and both of which arguably are the touchstone of the Western world's entertainment industry. Chinese state media has reported that on Tuesday there was an entertainment industry symposium. It was titled Love the Party, Love the Country, Advocate Morality and Art, which was attended by senior Communist Party officials who laid out new regulations on industry practice and the behaviour of celebrities. Attendees heard that they must ensure they consciously oppose the decadent ideas of money worship, hedonism and extreme individualism. And the new rules call for broadcasters to enforce a correct beauty standard, to boycott male entertainers who don't exhibit what is traditionally masculine characteristics. They also ban all idol audition shows, that's IDOL, and recommend blacklisting anyone who's broken the law or offended public morals. Well, with me now is Professor Haicheng Yu from the Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology, who researches China's digital media, communication and culture. Hi, Professor Yu.
Hello, Karen. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. What do you make of this? Is there a cultural crackdown happening?
The West, well, we only think it is a sign of cultural crackdown. Some people say it's a new cultural revolution that subjects the Chinese people to more tightened totalitarian control. Because it's really hard to see the real picture when we don't live there and we can only access the information that is available to us. But I like to connect all the dots instead of just focusing on this particular incident. You know, we see all these from a couple of years ago, from the Empty Your Plate campaign, the tech crackdowns, to now the celebrity cleanups, from the three children per family policy to the crackdowns on private coaching schools and the gaming restrictions for under the 18-year-old, etc. We can see the general trend. So this recent celebrity crackdown is just part of the general trend. The general trend, what I call, is the governing by morality. That is in combination with the legalist code of reward and the punishment. All this stuff has been in the Chinese tradition for millennium. You know, the combination of Confucianism with the legalism as a part of the China's statecraft. So since China has looked backwards at this traditional political culture and marry it with the party culture in order to deal with the so-called social evils towards the China, in order to achieve China's rejuvenation or the Chinese dream. So the messaging is private individuals and companies cannot be self-serving. They must serve the common good. So that's my general interpretation of what's happening now.
It's a bit of a paradox, though, isn't it? Because those in the entertainment industry, there's always money involved. There's fame, there's glamour, there's power. So how is that going to work in the entertainment industry, and how will it affect the entertainment industry in China?
The entertainment industry has been called upon to serve the nation, to spread the so-called positive energy for a long time. And some people, actually lots of celebrities, have kowtowed to such a kind of party call. And the people that the recent crackdown has focused on basically serves the purpose of killing the monkeys to scare the chickens, right? So, you know, in the West, we see kind of, oh my God, this is, it's just terrifying. You know, how can the investors invest in the Chinese entertainment industry or the tech industry anymore? But if you talk to the ordinary Chinese people, you get a different interpretation, with some actually quite enthusiastically support such crackdowns. And they say, well, it comes too late. So it's really, there's mixed message in there.
Thank you, Professor Yu. And so we used to pride ourselves in New Zealand as being egalitarian. Do you think we are now?
I think you are.
Sorry, Sue.
Sorry, you're asking me.
Yes, I'm asking you, yes.
Oh, no, I don't think we're an egalitarian society. I think ever since neoliberalism, we've got massive inequity in our society. But I was interested in that in this Chinese crackdown, that they seem to be particularly exercised about what they call sissy men. And in fact, they want to ban effeminate men, or men who project a feminine image. They're also cracking down on the role of women. And I see they're starting to disappear. Some of their top female stars are disappearing. And although it seems sort of almost so ridiculous, you'd almost just dismiss it as being absurd, it is, as your guest said, it's just a sort of chilling version of Mao's Cultural Revolution. So what they're basically saying is arts and culture can only exist if they're promoting party propaganda.
I was hesitant to use the word sissy, Professor, because I thought it might have been lost in translation, but obviously not.
Yes, that's a term that's been translated into English, the CC culture, and which is completely opposite to the wolfish kind of style, as in the Chinese wolf warrior kind of style, diplomat style that the CC China has been promoting. So the kind of CC, the androgynous image of male celebrities, consider not serving the role models for younger people and the future, who are the future of the Chinese nation. And then to build a strong China, to achieve the China dream, and therefore we need stronger people, young, particularly among the younger generation, both physically and mentally. That I think that's the kind of a logic that has been accepted by lots of Chinese as being, as we can see on social media.
How do you receive this from a distance in Melbourne, looking from the outside in? What's your personal view on it?
It is a very good question. It's very hard to look at what's happening in China from afar, when we don't live there, and we can only access the information that is available to us. And therefore, I tend not to jump onto a conclusion such as China is experiencing a new cultural revolution, straight away. I like to always put things into context, to look at the historical lineage, to look back at what happened in the past, and recently, and why it's happening now, and what purpose it's going to achieve. Not just looking at the entertainment circle, but also looking at the tech area, and also China's geopolitical relations with other nations. So we still need time to look at the dust.
Isn't it a massive crackdown and censorship of dissent, whatever you want to call it?
The censorship what?
Of dissent. I mean, they're not allowing, they just want conformity.
Oh, yes.
It's just conformity and propaganda.
Oh, we've seen that for a while. It's just not a recent thing. Ever since 2014, the Chinese speech online, particularly online speech environment, has deteriorated a lot. Increasingly, you know, particularly this year, last year since the COVID started, and there has been lots of new regulations and new rules to restrict what people can say online, who can say what, particularly when it comes to news, political affairs, natural disasters, and emerging issues. So people have now have been, you know, self-censorship exercising self-censorship for a long time, but now they're even more careful. Not even in private conversation. So this is real concern for lots of China observers.
Professor Yu, thank you for joining us this afternoon.
You're welcome. Thanks a lot.
That's Professor Hai Cheng Yu from the Royal Melbourne Institute of Technology. And Neil,
I was going to provide a dissenting view there and say that the one thing that they've got right in this otherwise very repressive policy is banning any show with the name Idol in it. I think every country in the Western world should adopt that immediately, and our culture would be the better for it. Otherwise, I think it's just an example of China is in the ascendancy. It's on the way up, and it uses every lever of power, whether it be military, whether it be agriculture, whether it be tech, whether it be trade. And this is just another example of using culture to promote a particular message in quite a strict and authoritarian way. It's nothing new. But the language, just reading the language that is being used by the Chinese Communist Party at the moment, it literally could have been written by Mao Zedong. It is using that kind of phraseology that was his trademark. And so that's why I think it is a step backwards.
But it's, I doubt that it's going to work, because by the time you've crushed all the dissent, you've probably also crushed all the innovation and creativity. And you've got these sort of conformist sheep, and they're not going to get the innovation and creativity that will lead a society on.
I totally agree with your analysis, but I don't think the Chinese Communist Party is concerned about the loss of innovation. I think it would much rather have the sheep. And so I think that's why they're pushing it so hard.
Neil Miller, Sue Kedgley, my guests on the panel this afternoon.